We need to start with a little burst of energy.
Let's do it, friends.
Do it. We are so excited. I'm so excited. I don't know how I slept last night. I was so excited. We have such a special guest for you today. And I met this person because it was actually shared on our Facebook page that he was doing an incredible webinar called Leading Through Landmines. And it was about racism. And I felt really compelled to jump on his webinar. And I really was texting Kristen immediately after saying, this just feels like someone who is so special, who is so just the way you were speaking, what your background was. You have a background as an artist and you're a healer and you're just the most incredible voice. And I was so excited to connect with you. And you generously on this webinar, Kristen, get this, he gave us his number. He's like, hey, if anyone wants to talk to me, here's my number. Like, call me. And I was like, whoa, like, who does that? So I texted him and I was like, hey, I watched your webinar. And even our text exchange was so full of joy. And he would ask me questions like, what's making your heart sing today? And I was like, oh my gosh, we must try to get this incredible human being on our podcast. And we must tell the world or our world about this person. So without further ado, I would love to introduce to our audience, Ta Whitty.
And hey. Thanks for having me.
It's so good. Now I'm going to brag about you, okay?
Brag away.
He's a bio-integration specialist. Doesn't that sound so fancy and amazing? He partners with seven-figure entrepreneurs, no joke, business leaders, physicians, and nurses on the optimization and seamless integration of their bodies into their life processes. Artists, we can use all this too. And not simply in their work lives, but their entire life. He helps mind-based high achievers. He noticed that they often have body crashes that can get in the way of their continued success on all fronts. So he partners with A-type performers, that would be Kristen and I as well, to get their bodies on board to the support of their high-powered lifestyles. Mindset needs a body set to match. I freaking love that. His clients live their lives in fun and fulfillment, the name of the game. He has practiced as a registered nurse in New York City for 25 years and in the specialty of emergency medicine. He loves people with all of his being. I love that's in your bio because that is so true in the 5 seconds I have known you. And also, some of you may be fan peopling right now because you may also know this incredible human as Ta from the Bush, because he was also an incredible underground hip hop artist from like the mid 90s to like moments ago. And you're always an artist, so I'm going to say
always.
So we're so happy that you're here. Thank you so, so much.
Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
So incredible. So when I was watching your webinar the other night, I was incredibly moved by your specific life experience and the specific way that your life has led you into all of these different things: artistry, healing, obviously conversations, and living embodiment of racism. So would you mind telling our audience just kind of how your journey has led you to be where you are now and why you felt compelled to do what you're doing now?
Sure. It's been a journey. So I am 48 years old. I will be 49 in December, and it's been quite a ride. And I grew up in Brooklyn, New York. I was born in Coney Island Hospital of all places. My mother was a nurse at the time, and my father was an X-ray technician, and they met at Coney Island Hospital, and I was the second of three kids. We started to grow up in Crown Heights, Brooklyn until 1977, and we moved to Flatbush, Brooklyn. And there I stayed until I left New York, which was in 2018. And I experienced a lot of really interesting, frightening situations in New York City as the world evolved during my lifetime. And I grew up in there was a lot of gang war. There was a lot of crack ravaged New York City when I was a kid. And I saw a lot of shit. And when I was in high school, Spike Lee was a big deal. And there was a lot of films that he did around race, around us really starting as people who identify as Black, really starting to have some empowerment in itself. There was a lot of Public Enemy. There was a lot of, you know, there was a lot around Black people really starting to step in. KRS-One, a lot starting to step in and take sovereignty over themselves in a very race oppressed world. And starting to bring awareness to situations. So I started to study a lot. You know, I started to study, you know, Baldwin, and I studied King and you know, just everybody that I could study, I delved into it. And I started to see a lot around my skin tone. And there was a lot of things going on with me being a light-skinned Black person that people just couldn't wrap their heads around. And particularly with white folks and people that were not Black, couldn't understand that I was a Black person. And I had to be mixed race. I had to be Puerto Rican. I had to be Dominican. I had to be all of this stuff, anything but Black. I am a descendant of slaves in the United States of America. There are no white people in my family for generations. Just a bunch of light-skinned Black folks and some darker-skinned Black folks. We have a very diverse palette of colors in my family, but it's mainly lighter-skinned folks. I saw a lot of different dynamics from lighter-skinned people and darker-skinned people. I was oppressed from both ends. I was also welcome from both ends. So there was a lot that I had to navigate through. And I didn't have my mother, who is the first Black woman in the world to be the type of physician she is. My mother had me, my brother, and my sister. And she went to medical school. She went back to college to do pre-med in, I think it was 78. My father moved us from where we were, bought a house, put us in it so that my mother could have space to study for medical school. And my mother went to medical school with three kids, and she became a physician, and she became the first Black woman in the world to be a perinatologist, which is a maternal fetal medicine specialist. And there are probably 200 of them in the country at any given time. So she's a very highly specialized physician. And, you know, I love my mother's a superhero to me. And, you know, because of a lot of the oppressive stuff in the world, my mother still has a tremendous amount of self-esteem issues, you know, around shit related to her mom, you know, her mother telling her she's never going to be shit because we've been programmed that we ain't never going to be shit as Black people. So there's a lot of stuff, you know, that I had to kind of, and then still do deal with as a human being, as a result of all the programming in my family. My mother was always at work. My father worked two jobs. My father retired from two hospitals as an X-ray technician, two full pensions. Okay. And this is how much my father worked. So I didn't have a lot of space to be like, hey, let's talk about racism. Hey, let's talk about, I had to figure this shit out on my own. And, you know, my brother and I didn't have a very great relationship until we became adults. There was a lot of, you know, I'm not going to get into the semantics behind that. My sister, I protected my sister from a lot of stuff, including stuff in regards to me. There was a lot of shame in my life. There was a lot of separation in our household. It was a really bumpy time for me. And I can only speak for myself. I will not speak from the perspective of anyone else in my household but me. And it was a very frightening childhood, very frightening, very lonely childhood, filled with lies. I lied about everything in my life, and it caused my body to be completely tense all the time. I was told that I developed something called retinitis pigmentosa, and I was told that I would be blind by the time I was 40. I used to wear glasses. I do not wear glasses anymore. I do not have contacts in my eyes. I have been able to get my eyesight to to normalize and stabilize to where I just passed my driver's license exam recently for the first time in my life with no glasses on. And I am not blind. I'm 8 years past where they told me I would be blind. I've learned that through honesty with myself and getting my body into a space where it feels super relaxed and calm, my body can heal itself. So I went to nursing school when I got in. So I kind of, is are expletives cool on your,
Oh, always.
I fucked around. I fucked around in high school because my brother was so troubled. And we still have to have a conversation around this. My brother was so troubled that he pulled a lot of attention from me. So I wanted to get attention from my parents. I was fucking up in school on purpose, and my parents just didn't seem to notice. And so my grades were so shitty, I couldn't get into anything but a community college in New York. And so in Kingsborough, I mean, y'all from the East Coast, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So Kingsborough Community College in Sheepshead Bay, and they had the best nursing program in the state. I believe it was the state at the time. So I was like, let me see if I can get into this. And so I went and I took they make you take these proficiency tests and stuff. And they were like, man, your English skills are crazy. I was like, I love the English language. They were like, how'd you get such terrible grades in high school? I was like, this is why. And they were like, what? So I did honors English and all this stuff. And I did nursing and I flew through the whole program. And I, at age 20, I graduated from Kingsborough with my registered nurse license at age 20. And so I started to work at Kings County Hospital, which was the biggest municipal hospital in Brooklyn. And I worked with a lot of, it was just a lot of really crazy shit. And, you know, my first experience with going to sit for this, was the director of the emergency room came and my father worked at Kings County. My mother was a resident at Kings County. So I got the in, right? So I go and I sit and I'm at the administrator's office sitting there with my hair was all in twists and shit. And it was hanging down. I had my fucking, I had a bandana on my head. It was, so I'm sitting there and a woman comes from the ER and she's this white lady, just pasty, like super pale white lady. And she's like, you know, I don't think that you'll do well in the emergency room. You know, the Filipino girls and the white girls, I think they'll, you know, yeah, she said this shit to me just right out. And I was like, man, this was my first real deep experience as far as the racism in the job area when I was a nurse. And I worked at 12 different hospitals, so I saw a lot of shit. So she was like, I think you'd do better to just work on the floor because I don't think you can handle it. I was like, I don't want to work in your ER. I don't want to. And I said that to her. I said, I don't want to work in your ER. I'll work on the floor. You have a nice day. I'm finished. You can leave now. And I told her that. I was like, you can leave now. And the woman who I was talking to, who was the hospital administrator, she's like, I'm so sorry. I was like, don't worry about it. You know, I'm good. I've seen crap before. And, but you know, in the job space, anyway, that started my nursing career, in a really weird place. And I think 99% of the nurses at Kings County were black and, the doctors were all white. So it was really interesting place to work. And so I've seen discrimination a lot through my life. I had a really amazing career in nursing. I worked at 12 different hospitals in New York City because I wanted to see diversity. I wanted to see what disease processes were like on different people in the different areas of New York City. So I worked with upper class people, middle class, lower class people, as far as finances, socioeconomic backgrounds are concerned. I worked my last gig in New York City was in just south of Chinatown. So I've worked with Italians, Irish people. I've worked with Russian people. I've worked with all sorts of black, Afro-Caribbean, black American. I've worked with all sorts of folks. And this is because I wanted to see how disease affected people. And if there was any discrepancy, any true discrepancy in how disease affected people. And so to backtrack, when I was in nursing school, well, before nursing school, when I was in high school and all of the music stuff was happening, I was like, man, hip hop is great, but everybody's so angry. And I'm not angry. I have anger in me. I'm not angry. I want to get in and I want to make my own hip hop music. And so I would rap about my teachers and I would make these comedy raps and all of this shit. And so by the time I got to college, some of the cats that I went to high school with were like, let's make a rap group. So we made a rap group, right? We made a hip hop group and we started to shot demos and we started to go to the studio and I started to get polished and I started to freestyle and I was doing all this stuff from like 1990. Yeah, like 1990. My first record got released in 1993. It wasn't released. It was a demo. That record, that first string of songs that we did in 1993 just got released in Europe on vinyl like 2 years ago.
Whoa.
It's crazy.
That's awesome. Yeah,
like it's on this, on Red Herring Records. The group I was in was called Absolute Value. And you know, anything within the two bars of absolute value, anybody who knows mathematics, anything that goes within the two bars, no matter if it's a negative or positive, it's a positive space on a number line. So it's negative, it's positive in a negative direction or positive in a positive direction. So we call the group Absolute Value because no matter what was in between those bars, it was about positivity. And so we like everything that we talked about wasn't positivity. And if you listen to those songs, like what? So, you know, we went through the ringer of kind of making things fit so that people who were listening to the music would get it. And then we would lay in the positive stuff underneath it so that people could kind of be like, oh yeah, this is where it's at. And so that group eventually broke up. And I started to lean into doing things on my own. I created this publication called Ghetto Barbershop Monthly, which I created, and I had all these other artists contribute to it to because I wanted a tour. I didn't know how to get on a tour or anything. So I created this publication called Ghetto Barbershop Monthly, and the first periodical, I did all of it, right? And then I went and I got it printed and I paid for it. And then I distributed it to barbershops all over New York City so people would have shit to read when they were getting their hair cut. And it was just, you know, there's always shit to talk about, you know, the arguments between Pac and Biggie and all of this stuff. And I took it all over the place. And then people started hitting me up and they were like, I want to be in Ghetto Barbershop Monthly. And I did a tour, the Ghetto Barbershop tour. And we would go around New York City and we would do shows in barbershops. We would do shows in record stores. We would do all of this shit all over the place. And it just started to grow. It was still really underground, but we had a nice solid group of people that we would tour around with. And so that got a little popular. And then it was just exhausting to do all that shit. I'm a publisher and I'm writing and I'm editing and I'm doing this and I'm performing. It was exhausting. And so I was doing all of that shit while I was doing nursing. And then my father died in 2000. And so I stopped. I was working at St. John's in Queens, and then I took a sabbatical from St. John's to go run the ER at Interfaith Medical Center. So I was running Brooklyn Jewish and St. John's Medical Center, right? They call it Interfaith. I was running both of those ERs, and then my father got sick, and so I quit Interfaith, went back to St. John's. And I had to take a leave of absence to take care of my dad. So all the touring and Ghetto Barbershop Monthly and all that stuff, I had to put that on the back burner because my father was dying. And my father died a very slow, arduous death over 9 months. And it broke my heart into shreds. And so from there, when after my father died, things kind of stabilized for me. And I was like, I'm gonna tour around the world. So I started to build, I would make these huge signs that said Todd from the Bush. And you can ask people in New York City, and I would put it on like a picket sign, and I would walk into clubs and stuff in the underground hip hop shows, and I would just walk around with the sign, and people would be like, what does that mean? I'd be like, that's me. And and so I would go to stuff and I would rhyme, and I would go to open mics and I would rhyme with this sign in my hand that said my name on it. And I got really known really well for being the dude walking around with a picket. And so this is the shit that I would do all this creative stuff, and I would go talk to everybody. So at my shows, I would get to my shows really early, and I would talk to everybody in the bar, right? Everybody in the bar, everybody in the club, all over the place. And I would just go, hey, what y'all doing here? You know, and I wouldn't tell them that I was performing. I would just say, hey, my name's Ta, and you know, blah, blah, blah. I think we all here to see. And then by the time we finished the conversation, I'm like, hey, I'm going to be on stage later. I'd love if you stick around. And so by the time I got on stage, everybody in the place knew me, and they were all up under the stage. And so I had the whole crowd, even the other people's fans were there up under the stage.
Yes.
This is how I built my fan base. And so I would carry these little pieces of paper that said name, email address, and zip code on it. And I would have people put there, and this was, and even before email, I would just be like name, phone number. And so I had this huge email list based off of these little pieces of paper. And I would talk to people, and I would write there, I would, hey man, listen, I'd love to tell you more about my shows and shit. And I would give them the paper, and they would write their name on it. And then on the back of it, I would write what their outfit was or whatever it is, so that I could remember the conversation. And then when I got back home, I would email them personally and put them on my email as, hey man, it was great to meet you. Nice tie, you know, great hat, or, you know, hey, how's your mom doing? You know, just whatever it is. So everybody on my email list was a personal connection. And so I built my email list like that. And so I learned to really be able to talk to all these different people. And I learned through all the conversations that I had with people that people were very tied together, regardless of what their age was, regardless of what their race was, regardless of what their ethnicity was, where they lived. And so I started to tie all this shit together with this stuff from nursing. And so it started to make sense. And I started to, the triage skills that I had from nursing, of being able to assess a person's body posture, if they were lying, if they were telling the truth, the way they smelled, what their body heat was when I was next to them. I started to be able to lean in to see if they would actually lean into me and my music. And so I started to assess people with all this stuff. And so everything started to come together, and I started to really synchronize and connect deeply, intimately with my fans. And my fans became my greatest friends, my greatest allies. I have a core of maybe 600-700 fans that will do anything for me. And that is my heart. And so I took that and I really learned to run with it and start to show people how to connect their bodies into everything that they're doing, how to connect their bodies into all of this stuff, how to start to be honest. And so when after I met Cole, I was in a relationship before I met Cole, I was in a relationship for 8 years, and it was getting kind of rocky, and I wasn't feeling deeply connected. And a lot of shit was going on in the world, in my life. And I started to get into this despair space because I wasn't being honest about everything in my life. And my body started to hurt. And when I met Cole, she was like, you know, Ta, I see where you are. I know shit's really hard in your life. But I think that you should come do this ceremony thing with me. And I was like, well, ceremony, what are you talking about? And she was like, you know, you get into this room with these people and you take these plants and you go into this psychedelic realm and you find yourself. And I was like, oh, you want me to do some drugs with some hippie white people?
Yeah.
I was like, I don't do drugs, man. And so I had all this judgment around substances from nursing, because they had us programmed hard that if you take anything outside of what Big Pharma tells you to take, is fucked up. Mm. And so I ended up at the hospital. I kept saying, I got to get out of this hospital. I'm going to the hospital every day. I really want to heal people. I want to help people, but I'm giving them shit that I know is making them worse. And so I took an oath to do no harm, and I feel like I'm doing harm. So I was out of integrity with myself. I was out of honesty. And I'm going to clear my throat. Excuse me. I was out of integrity with myself. So I ended up breaking my back. Like, so I'm doing fitness. So also, since I was trying to get out of the hospital, I started doing fitness training for about 10 years. So I was looking to make a transition out of nursing. And so, yeah, I did a lot of shit. I tell you, I got a big resume.
Yeah.
So I did personal training on the side for quite some time. And then I was running boot camps in the park. I had this thing called Underground Celebrity Fit Club that I was
doing. Yes.
Look at the look of surprise on your faces just now. Like,
Where did you find the hours to do all this? It's amazing.
I didn't sleep. I had insomnia for 30 years. So I didn't sleep very well. And so I was up all the time. So I was creating all this stuff, but it was taking a toll on my body. And so I kept saying, I got to get out of this hospital. I got to stop doing this. I got to get out of here. And I ended up breaking my back at the hospital lifting a patient. So I fractured L5, and I had a herniation between L5 and S1, and I couldn't walk for 3 months, and I lost all my clients. I couldn't work at the hospital. I couldn't do my shows. I couldn't do nothing. So my income disappeared. Everything got hit rock bottom. The relationship that I was in officially crashed. She decided that she wanted to make moves, and, you know, she wanted to have kids and stuff. And she was in her right space to want to do that, because that's not where I was. So all of this stuff happened, everything fell apart. And that's when Cole was like, the amount of stuff that you've done and the way you want to put things together. And I was in this place where I was like, you know what? The human beings are so immature, and this place is, I'm just done, man. I'm done. So I was like literally dying, because I was in this place of despair and feeling alone in all of the work that I had done on myself. And I'm like, why isn't anybody else doing this work? And she was like, there are people who are doing it. You should come do this ceremony thing. So I went and I sat for a journey, and I had a sassafras, which was the precursor for MDMA. And I had this really horrifying experience, and everybody was like, I've never seen anybody have a horrible experience with sassafras before. It's a heart opener. I was like, yeah. And during the ceremony, Cole was like, Ty, why don't you just let go? Just let go. And I let go. And that's when everything shifted. And I had this huge opening around all of these things that I had been doing coming together and coalescing, and they all connected. And so all of the things that I had been learning around nursing, and all of the interactions that I had from music, and all of the interactions that I had from my family, and everything just started to make sense in a very cohesive way for me. And I started to really be honest with Cole about everything in my life. And I'm so grateful for this woman coming into my life, because she's my greatest homie on the planet. And I ride for this woman. She's the bee's knees, cat's meow, and all the other all those other things.
You guys are such a gorgeous looking couple inside
Thank
and
you.
Out.
Yeah, she's beautiful, man. She's, yeah. I'm around this woman like 23 hours a day if I'm not around her. And I laugh all the time, and we have such a great, open, honest relationship about everything. And that's what actually tamed my insomnia, was me being able to be honest with Cole the way I am, and to be accepted for all of me. Shame has been a huge part of my life, that something is wrong, broken or bad about me. And so to be in a space where I have a person who is consistently with me, who consistently shows me that no matter what comes up for me, it's accepted here. And that honesty stopped me from feeling lonely, because dishonesty puts you into a space where you have to hide. And when you have to hide, no matter if you're in a room full of people, you are alone. And that aloneness provides a posture. And that posture, your body is constantly is not at rest. When you're just being honest, it's just like, fuck it. Right. And when you're not being honest, you have to be on alert, because you have to keep your lies in order. And I was lying to everybody. So that dishonesty place showed up for me dramatically. So I started putting things together with the nursing situation, because when I was at the hospital, people would like, I'd let people be honest with me and be like, hey man, how are you? And I was very casual with all my patients. Everybody was super casual. My fan base, super casual. And people would come to me and be like, I feel like I've known you forever. And they would just unload on me. And they'd be like, man, I feel so comfortable around you. So people would always want to be around me. And I didn't understand. It's because I was allowing them to be themselves, but I wasn't allowing myself to be myself completely. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of a mismatch. I was allowing, but I wasn't actually being honest completely. So, once I started to let the gate down and I started to be honest, my body started to remedy all this stuff. I had thyroid issues. I had all this shit. This shit just vanished. Like all these things just disappeared. So, when, when I started to be honest with Cole, my body started to change. It started to shift, and I started to put all these things together, and I started to see the correlation between that. And when I was in nursing, people would be like, can you close the curtain? I need to tell you something. And they would tell me their deepest secrets. You know, I'm in love with my brother. I'm, you know, I've done this. I hurt this person. I killed that. I shot this, and I've never been able to live with it. And then they would die. Like their body finally got to rest. And so so I started to apply this shit to the person. So when I actually rehabbed my back myself, they told me that I need to get surgery. They told me that I had to put screws in my back, that I need to have injections and take all these medications and shit. And I said no to all of it. And I rehabbed my back myself. And so I have no back pain, right? I'm stronger, faster than I've ever been in my life, right now. And all of this shit. So I started to apply all of this shit to my personal training clients, and I started to see them come off of medications, I was like, this is fucking awesome. And so I started to really get into shit with them when I was training them. And I'm asking them, you know, how's your relationship with your mom and all this. So I'm like doing therapy and seeing how shit would show up in imbalances in the body. And then when they got to be honest about it, the imbalances would start to remedy themselves. And I'm like, this is awesome. So I started to put all this shit together and it started to make sense. And so it's like, I'm getting people to integrate their bodies into their lives by being honest. Being honest first and foremost, and then utilizing nutrition, movement practices, and all these other things to get themselves to integrate their bodies into their lifestyles completely. And that includes lifestyle with your family, lifestyle with yourself, lifestyle with your sex, your sensuality, lifestyle with your business, lifestyle with your relation to taxes and your credit score, right? Like all of the aspects of life, not just, you know, your career. Fuck that. You know, all aspects of you. You are a sexual person, whether you know it or not. There is something about all of us that sizes up another person when they see them. I'm a human being. When I see something that's attractive to me, I'm sizing it up. And so this is part of how I developed all of this stuff. So I know this is a long story, but y'all asked me to tell you how I got from A to B. And so this is the A to B. And so when you see the very complex, intricate nature of the individual human organism, you can kind of ride that and see where things are going, the direction they're going, but you never know the destination. I couldn't tell you where I'm going to be two months from now, as far as my career path is concerned. And things have moved recently, pivoted recently, where I did something called a virus manifesto of a New York City nurse, where I talked about viruses and what viruses are. And I kind of hipped people to what viruses are because of Corona. People have no idea. People think viruses are alive and they're not. They're actually chemical, they're biochemical agents that utilize the human organism to replicate itself and spread. So it's a very ingenious mechanism. And so I did this whole thing and it was really interesting for people to see how people responded to that. And now with all the racism, all the racism stuff, I actually pivoted into that because people have been asking me around that. So yeah.
Wow. That is so fun to just get to see your life and how, you know, it's that soul thing. Everything was leading up to who you are now. Yep. And what is becoming and what is coming out of you. It's just beautiful.
Thank you. And thank you for listening to all that. I mean, I know it's a pretty long-winded situation and I don't normally talk that long, but yeah. So thank you.
Thank you. It really is a gift to hear you specifically that your journey has led you to have to really listen and hear yourself and hear what your truth is. Mm-hmm. And so now for you to be able to say, hey, I use my life to share my truth and help other people share what their truth is. I mean that, and I also am just so moved by how the creative source was always moving you in the next direction. And so even if things didn't make sense, like what does nursing have to do with underground hip hop music or what does this have to do with that? This really interesting thing that you are what it all has to do with, that your life and your vision and your purpose is the thing. And what Kristen and I are always saying to creators and artists is you know, tapping into the thing inside of you that's your true north. That's just saying, just go here, just do this one next thing. You don't have to know why. It doesn't have to make sense. And you will pivot at the right moment if you're really in that deep listening.
Yeah, agreed. You know, and the body is the compass, you know, in our society. So our society tends to have spirituality. We have this totem pole of esteem is hierarchy. Since we're in this society of hierarchy that needs to stop being hierarchical, yes. We have spirituality up here, then mind underneath that, then the societal constructs and identity is underneath that. Underneath that, look, it's this pyramid, right? Underneath that is the heart space and intuition. Below that is body, which is fourth class citizen. And then underneath that is the microbiome, which is all of the bacteria, viruses, and all these things that dwell within us. And if you take that totem pole and you turn it sideways, right, and you have this esteem for all of these parts of the human organism in this, on the same level, and you love on all of those parts of the organism and bring them together, you make a cohesive, integrated human experience. That's where the magic lies. And so when you bring all of those things into esteem together, and we honor each person's organism in that high esteem, all of the shit that that's in the world right now becomes, it's not a problem anymore, because we are honoring each individual as a collective, not honoring the collective as individuals. And so that's where I work from. It's this space of really, really deep connection with the self, and recognizing and recognition of the self and recognition of the other selves of the world. So, yeah.
Beautiful. And when a client comes to work with you, mm-hmm. what is often the process of, well, why someone comes to you, and then what are you assessing when they come to you, and how does that work unfold?
Sure. So when people come to me, they usually have health crashes. Health crashes. So there are multiple types of crashes people have. And with entrepreneurs and people who are A-type, they usually have body crashes and they don't know why. They have adrenal fatigue and they have all these different things. And they've been running their body on overdrive, posturing and doing all these things. And they've been in a very heavy mind space. And a heavy mind space draws brain power, right? Because the brain, the way I see things, the brain and the mind are not the same thing, but they work together. The mind is conscious, is your organism's direct link to consciousness. So the mind helps you compute all of the stuff that's, and make sense of all that stuff that's going on. The brain is the organ inside your body that actually drives the body. And so when you are heavy in the think space, the brain uses a lot of calorie. It uses a lot of calorie. And for some reason my phone's on. The brain uses a lot of calorie it draws away from the rest of the body. And so when you're in a very heavy mind space all the time, the rest of the body cannot catch up. So it's getting the body to be the compass and getting the body to start to be the Geiger counter for everything. So people have body crashes. They have disease entities. They don't know why. They go into all these doctors and things are not getting remedied. Their emotional space is not being observed. Their honesty space is not being observed. And many of the people that come to work with us, they love their businesses, but they don't want to do it anymore. Or they don't love the partner that they're working with, or the people that they're working with, or the system that they've created, but they feel like they have to because it's withdrawing in finance. Or they feel like they have to be in their family paradigm because of a religion, or they have allegiance. Allegiance is a societal construct, right? I am allegiant to something else, so I have to be loyal to this, even if I don't physically agree with it. So when the body disagrees, when the body says no, it says no. There's a book by Gabor Mate, When the Body Says No. Really great book. Read that book. when the body says no, it says no. And you can mind your way and try to rationalize into any space that you want. But when the body says no, it says no. And you can force it to do things. When it's in a disagreeing space energetically, it's going to cause a disruption in how energy flows through the body and how your organs perform. And then it becomes uneasy and it becomes diseased. So this is a space that most people that come to us are in, this mystery space. Man, I've been to doctors, I've been to practitioners, I've been to my Reiki person, I've been to all these people, and this shit just doesn't make sense. And I'm like, let's sit down and talk. And so the process, so I hope that answers the question on how when people show up. And people come to us by word of mouth most of the time because they're like, I don't know what to do. Go see Todd and Cole. What do they do? Just go see them. that's the thing. Just go see them. I don't know how to explain this shit. Just go see Todd and Cole. And so they come to us and we have a process. And so the process starts with evaluation. You evaluate, right? You lay all your shit out on the table. And we have something called the naked truth that we work with people on. And it's a process of, one, getting into your self-esteem and asking yourself questions around your self-esteem and how you see yourself. Do you like yourself? Do you like the way your body is? Being really, really honest. And everything we do is rooted in deep, deep, radical self-honesty. After that, it's do you like where you live? You know, the house that you live in, the city that you live in, the people that you live around. Do you like your neighborhood? Do you like the carpet in your house, the paint on your walls, all of these things, because you're walking in there every day. Do you like the bed that you're living in, that you're sleeping in? Because these are things that your body is posturing to protect you from if you don't really like it. Mm. So what your relationship to, like I said before, to finance, your credit score, you know, taxes, you know, what is it, you know, how do you feel when taxes, like most people, when tax time comes up, people's bodies are so averse to dealing with paying taxes, seeing their accountant. People really hate that shit. And so seeing how this sits in your body, what are you preparing for the whole year for tax time? Like people prepare all year round for holidays, right? What is your relationship to religion? What is your relationship to spirituality? Do you agree with the spiritual or religious practices that you're following in your body? Does your body actually agree with it? What is your love life like? Your sex life? Your relationship to sexuality and sensuality? They are all different. All four of those things, they tend to be grouped together, but they're all different. Love, sex, sensuality, sexuality. What are the deep considerations in regards to those things? And then we move into your relationship with your family, friends, and people that you're proximal to. Do you love them? Do you like them? Do you want to be around them? Do you like your kids? Do you like your mom? And this doesn't have anything to do with loving, but do you like them? Do you like being around them? Like I have people who have said to me, man, you know, I love my kid, but dick, you know, and it's a little kid, like a 8-year-old. And it's being able to be honest about it with somebody so the body can rest, man. You know, I never thought, you know, I've had a lot of people will say, I love my kids, but I don't want to be a parent. And it allows them to relax, man, to be honest, to just be honest about this shit. And so when the honesty happens, it allows the body to bring up all the other stuff to the surface. And when the other stuff comes to the surface, we can get that stuff out on the table and we can start to formulate plans to address these things, to have the uncomfortable conversations around these things, to have the uncomfortable conversations with the family members. And this is what people will fly me and Cole across the country to go have conversations with their family members because they are deathly afraid of having these conversations. We've had conversations with people where they're leaving religions, they're leaving things behind, people that have been orthodox in spaces for their entire lives who don't agree with the religion that are leaving. And so they need to have conversations with their families around this stuff, and they need to have people and create a network of folks that will support them in their life moving forward. And when you have this stuff and the body actually feels safe with this stuff, the body can relax. And healing doesn't just happen in a space where you're resting. You can rest, you can go to sleep and not be relaxed. You can be laying in a bed next to somebody that you're not relaxed with your entire life. And so when you get into a space where your body can relax, your body can actually remedy itself if you give it the proper nutrition, the proper hydration, and the support it needs to remedy itself. And when you move all this other shit out of the way, the body can heal itself. I am proof of that. And if you go on my Instagram, it's Tahfree, T-A-H-F-R-E-E, and scroll down a little bit, there's a before and after picture of me with a 10-year difference on my body. And when you see it, you're going to be like, holy shit. It's a whole different person. I don't wear glasses anymore. I'm in the best shape of my life. My skin is clear. All this shit, it's bananas. And so when you look, I'm living, breathing proof of the shit that I do. So I walk around and people are like, who are you? I'm like, I'm Ty. Who are you? You know, it's like, and then they start asking me questions and then they're like, well, how do I get to work with you? I'm like, let's talk about it. So And I take my time with each and every person. And so this is what the process starts out as. And the process starts in moving through that. And so that was the evaluation phase. So you do the evaluation phase, and then we do what we call the create and eradicate, right? So you create a list of things that you want to lean into in your life, and a list of things that you want to eradicate from your life. Right. So you have to create and eradicate, and you take the top five things or the top three things, depending on the person. And you know, we don't want to overwhelm people, and you start knocking things off the list of eradication, and you start adding to the things of creation. And so you make this list of things, and you lean into one thing at a time, and you create a plan around it. Right. So you move, you got evaluate, create and eradicate. And then you have the planning phase. So you create a plan around it. And the plan consists of you making a plan of the one or three or five things on the list that you're going to create and eradicate. And you make a plan, and you create a life team. And these are the people that you're going to be radically honest with and say, look, this is what I need, and this is why I need it. Can you support me in this? And that would be like people would be like, yeah, I need to go to the gym. Can you just remind me to go to the gym? Yeah, I can do that. And then they'll fall off. But if you sit and you tell, and we have a whole script that we write out for people to plug their shit in. I need help with this because of this. Like, why do you need to, like, people come to me, I need to lose body fat. Well, you can get a personal trainer, you know? But why do you need to lose weight? Well, because I'm too fat. Well, too fat for what? And then we start to get into the semantics behind it. What do you want to feel? You know, I want to feel sexy. Well, what does sexy mean to you? And then you get into the semantics of what a person wants to feel and what they want to experience. And then you craft that around that. And you have the people on the life team in on it. I want to lose weight because I want to feel sexy. I want to have this partnership. I want to have this connected feeling with my body and blah, 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 blah. Whatever it is for the individual person, you tell your life team members so that they're like, fuck yeah, I'm in, or they're like, nah, I'm out. And don't give anybody shit if they don't want to be on your life team. Just move to the next person and get it. Craft a team of people. And they can be people that are in your family, your friends, people that you pay. And this is a thing with people bringing practitioners in on their lives, their doctors, their Reiki people, whoever that they bring in. I keep saying Reiki. I don't know. That's my go-to today. Their physical therapists, whatever, bring them in on it. Look, I'm going to hire you as my physician. However, this is how shit's going to work for me since I'm paying you money. I need a life team member, and I need you to know why I need this disease to go away, or why I need this shit to happen, because it's important to me because of this. Are you in or not? And we've had people talk to their physicians, and they're like, I've never had anybody talk to me like this. And so you get to be the captain of your ship, and you're the captain of your ship, and you look, I want you, you're my doctor. I want you to talk to my massage therapist, and I want my massage therapist to talk to my physical therapist. And I want them to talk to my Reiki person, and I want them to talk to my cousin who's going to be keeping me accountable to go to the gym. And listen, I want to organize a Zoom call. It'll take 15 minutes. We do this every month. Are you in? And if you're not in, I'll find somebody the fuck else. And so when you're a person who's in control of your life, who's sovereign, you have control over this. And so we plug all of this into the situation. It's the evaluation. It's the creation, eradication, the planning phase, and after the planning phase, life team creation. And then we implement, right? So we have the activation phase, right? You go out and you implement all of this stuff, and you run it for 3 months, and then you swing back around and you evaluate to see if you've gotten rid of some stuff that you want to get rid of and leaned into. You reevaluate, you recreate the plan, you adjust your life team, and then you implement that again, and then you swing it around, and it becomes a habit. Right. And so the thing about the human body is it's habitual. Everything is habitual. You slack off habitually, or you're active habitually. So we get people to create a habit around the physical body as the body is integrated and can start to read all of this stuff on autopilot. So it doesn't have to be a matter of forcing yourself into a space. This is your lifestyle. And so this is a whole new lifestyle that we've had people creating with this stuff.
Wow. And I can only imagine that. Even the thought of like feeling relaxed is actually so foreign that we're actually so used to not being relaxed that we probably don't even know really what it is to be relaxed, to be in our sovereignty. Like these are things that many people haven't even, we're so far from it that we don't even know what the gift, what the relief, what's possible, what we could create, who we could be in that space, which is giving people their freedom.
Yeah, agreed. And well, freedom actually, if I want to bring something to your attention, giving people their freedom. Freedom is not something that we can give to people. Mm. We have to take it. And you have to own your freedom. It is an individual sport. And I love to watch free people or people who are freeing themselves from stuff. When we wait for somebody else to give us our freedom, we will never have it. Mm. You know, so I just want to bring that to your attention because this it's something that I had to muddle through myself is because I was like, let's get free. No. Just be free. That's your choice. It's not something that somebody can give to you. And your branch of freedom, your style of freedom is your own. I can never tell you what your freedom looks like, but I can tell you that it's a familiar feeling when I'm around a person who is freeing themselves, who is freeing themselves from shit. It's different. And when you look at people who wear a bunch of different colors and their hair is all over the place and they don't give a shit what anybody thinks, I'm looking to lean into that person. What's going on with you? You know? So that's a person who's, when you're a sovereign, you take your own freedom. And it's not something that you wait for somebody to hand to you or wait for the government to hand to you or some religion or some shit. No, you take that yourself. And so this is, you know, this ties into the conversation around racism because people's bodies have been programmed into dynamics around racism and removing the shame of calling somebody a racist or a white supremacist and just asking them if they've been able to observe how racism moves through their body. You know, how does it move through your body? How does that happen? You know, how have I been plugged into this situation? And as I said earlier, I've seen shit from the light side and the dark side. So it's like I'm kind of in between Luke Skywalker and Darth Vader. It's like I'm right in the middle. And so I get to see all of this shit from all these different lenses. And so I've been able to see how racism has moved through my body. And I can see how I have benefited by being lighter skinned, by white people who associate with being white are able to lean into me in a more comfortable space. So I've been able to ride their body waves and see how their bodies respond to me, lean into that, and then actually get benefits for people who are darker than me because I have a privilege of sorts because of my skin tone. And so when I see how racism moves through me, I can bring it to the attention of other people. And so this is what I've been doing. I've been bringing it to the attention. Do you understand how racism moves to your body? Whether you believe that racism is an overarching situation in the world or not, or should I say an underarching, because it's a very embedded, deeply embedded shadow situation where it's below the surface of being able to see. And so when you can see the dynamics moving through you, you can make an active choice if you choose to, or you can just say, I see it. I'm gonna keep rolling with this, you know, if that's your choice, this, you're a sovereign being. If you want to roll in that space, you roll in that space. I don't think it's productive to the human race for us to participate in the dynamics of racism, but we do. And so as we are looking, people are right now in the world are looking to dismantle racism. And it's okay, cool. You're dismantling a system from a mind space. You're not involving the body. Where's the body in the involvement of racism? And are you seeing the neurological, the brain and nervous system programming around it? When you walk into a room and you see a person that you consider a person, if you're a white person and you see a person of color walk into a room, what is your body doing? You know, are you posturing? You know, are you talking about the latest rap song because you want to, you know, make somebody comfortable because they're outside of the norm or whatever it is, whatever your body is doing. Are you comfortable as a black or brown person or whatever ethnicity you are around white folks when they're walking through the room? Are you uncomfortable? If you're uncomfortable, that's racism moving through your body. You know, this is all part of it. And when you see yourself starting to posture and act a certain way in front of different races and all the ethnicities, you can start to see how racism is moving through your body. And this doesn't make you a racist person. There's a difference when you call someone a racist. When you call someone a racist, a shame device is going to activate in a person and they will block you out. They will look to protect themselves because you're challenging their identity. It's like calling somebody an asshole. Who wants to be called an asshole? I mean, yeah, I'm sure there's a few people that are like, call me. Listen, hey, whatever floats your boat, man, you know, in the water and get some oars, you know. But, you know, this whole paradigm of racism, what Cole and I have moved into is really helping people navigate this space in their bodies, because there's a lot of discomfort that's coming up right now. And people are not really aware. They're trying to mind their way. Right. Remember the totem pole. People are trying to mind their way out of this situation. They're trying to systems approach, which is right underneath the mind. Right. So you have spirituality, mind, and then the social situations. You're trying to system out of mind and social interactions when the body, the heart, and the microbiome are not involved in any of this shit. And so this is what we walk around in these suits. Right. We walk around in these bodies and nobody's paying attention to how we've been deeply, all of us have been deeply programmed into racist dynamics. And it doesn't make you a overt racist person with an agenda to hurt other people. People may be programmed into this space, and a great many of people are on the planet.
Wow. Thank you so much for your wisdom.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing your wisdom with us. I feel like I wrote down so many things.
I know. I was writing notes the whole time.
Yeah, exactly. I can't wait to read the notes again. And I'm just so excited that we get to share you with our community.
Yeah, I'm glad to be shared. I'm more than happy to chat with y'all. This is awesome. When you messaged me, I felt really, really connected, Natalie. So I really appreciate you reaching out. That's why I offer. Most people will not lean in because they're afraid. Like, people put me on this pedestal and I'm like, I'm a regular person like everybody else. And I, this pedestalization again is putting somebody up in a hierarchical situation. Take me off the pedestal and talk to me. It's really something that I enjoy. I enjoy connecting with folks. And, you know, Cole will be like, I don't know how you talk to all those people. Cole's the group person. I'm the one-on-one person. I like this. This is my zone. Like, talking to people is my shit. And so, when I did shows, like my ex, I would go to shows. I would be there early, and then I would be the last person to leave because I'm talking to everybody and I'm having these deep conversations with people. and there's people waiting to talk to me. this is my shit. So thank you for inviting me and for stepping into that space and just shooting me a message. Not many people, believe it or not, I got 2 or 3 calls from that webinar. Yeah, and it was a lot of people on that webinar.
Yeah.
So I got a lot of emails. I got a lot of text messages, not text messages, a lot of emails, Facebook messages and that type of stuff. But you and maybe 2 other people called me. So thank you. So yeah.
I was so excited too. I was like, wow, who gives their number? What a gift. I'm like, I am texting right now.
And you know, I mean, shit gets busy. I mean, if I'm glad I had the space.
Yeah. Thank you. We so appreciate it.
Yeah.
I know that our audience will be so inspired by you. And if they want to move deeper with you or find out more about what you and your beautiful wife do, is there a way they can get in touch with you all?
Sure. There's definitely. So I'd like to offer something to your audience. If they're interested in checking that webinar out, I think it's like $97 now. But I'll give you a coupon code for people that want to jump in on it and just take half of it off. It's Thakole, thakole.com/racism. And enter the coupon code SOULFAM, SOULFAM, SOULFAM. And they'll take half off the webinar. But if anybody is interested in leaning into doing some work with me, just you can go to that Thakole.com. There are forms on that page that people can hit us up. Also, check us out on Instagram. It's Instagram at Thakole, Thakole. And follow us on there. You know, we're going to be posting a lot more. Cole has recently left Facebook because she's just done with it. So she's going to be running all of our Instagram. I'll be popping in and out of Instagram, our joint account, but she's running that. And it'd be great to connect with any and all of you. Thank you for being artists, and thank you for all that you're doing to connect the world to feeling and substance and the deep root of who you are as an individual. Everything about you as an artist, as a human being, is beautiful. The coalescing of everything that has had to happen to get you to the point where you're even watching this right now is a beautiful thing to me. all of the people that came together to create your parents, that came together to create your grandparents, your great grandparents. Consider all of the deep, deep stuff that's happened, how they got their food, where the food came from, where it was transported from, all of the elements and water and stuff that has, that had to mix together to create the body that you have and the bodies that they had, to bring you to this moment right now, can put you in a space of deep gratitude for everything that you've had in your life, no matter how shitty, no matter how awesome. Every moment of your life has brought you to this right now, everything. And that is the space that I appreciate every artist in the world for bringing their artistry to have something to display that is a representation of a complex nature that could not be, cannot be completely traced from a conscious mind space because of the great intricacies of us as individual human beings. And when you try to blanket people into a race, or you try to blanket people into a gender, or you try to blanket people into anything, when you sit back and you get into a space where you can relax and see the really beautiful nature of each and every molecule of your fucking body, it is just one of the most powerful things to consider in this world. And I'm about consideration, and I consider all of you. So thank you for taking the time to watch this. Thank you too for taking the time to put this together. Thank you to your families. Thank you to everybody who's brought you food, everybody who's created all the shit that's in your house that sustains you. Thank you. I'm filled with gratitude, and I will always have that attitude, and that's where I live from. So if I could hug each and every one of you, I would. At some point, if you go down to hug, I will hug each and every one of you.
We're coming to Texas. That's it.
Yeah, I know.
We're going to show up at your door.
Hugs and snuggles, girl. I'm all about it.
We are on the way.
Yeah, come get it.
I feel like I'm going to take that section of the podcast and just like listen to it every morning and look at myself in the mirror and like throw my arms in the air. I mean,
that mirror work is really, really important to have that mantra to yourself every day.
Yeah.
If every day mantra is not something that is just some, I am a great person. it can be as simple as I'm amazing, you know? And that was a big thing for me, was starting off in that space of just being like, I'm amazing. When people ask me, how are you? I'm amazing. How are you? Whoa, so what's amazing? And let me tell you, and it reinforces it in your body, and it reinforces your body to get you back to that amazing space. If that's what you want, it can be anything you want.
Thank you for the gift of you. We are so, so grateful. And I hope everyone reaches out to watch that webinar, because it was really just, it's important and it's beautiful and it's inclusive and it's incredible. I'm just so happy to know you and your family and what you're creating on the planet. It's such a gift. So with infinite gratitude, thank you so much for being our guest today.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. We love to feel like we have friends all over the world in you who are committed to doing their dream on the planet.
And if you liked this podcast and you want to find out more about what we're doing or who we are, our pop-up classes, our online classes, you can check all of that out at thecreateseries.com.
And if you want to be part of our Facebook community, you can go to the Create Community page. That's C.R.E.E.T. community.
And if you loved this podcast, why not share it with a friend?